I had a lot of good things happen. Did lots of fun things when I was in my elementary school years. I had a really good childhood. Playing outside, making things. Where I started to get into trouble was in high school. High school is an absolute disaster of bullying and teasing. Absolutely terrible. I went to a large girls' school, and, you know, girls at the teenagers, they were more interested in boys than doing things like building things. And I ended up getting kicked out because I threw a book at a girl who called me a b-. And I ended up getting sent to special boarding school for kids with problems. I was absolutely not motivated to study. I had basically just messed around and not done any studying. Then my science teacher came along. And what he did is he gave me the motivation to study. Because now studying was a pathway to a goal of becoming a scientist. Without my science teacher, I don't think I would have gotten through high school.
Welcome to The Science of Happiness. I'm Dacher Keltner. Our guest today is one of my intellectual and cultural heroes, Temple Grandin. Born with autism, she was ostracized by her peers, socially isolated, and experienced a lot of anxiety as a child. Now Temple is a world-famous scientist, and she credits this to her support networks. We hear from Temple about the kinds of relationships that shaped who she is today, and we also talk about what the research has to say about health repercussions of not having strong social networks.
I don't think we should see social groups as like an optional extra when it comes to health. Like, this is really core business.
We'll hear from psychologist Tegan Cruis and get tips on the types of relationships that support us the most. More after this break. Hi, it's Dacher. If you're like me, you probably have a wide variety of interests when it comes to your podcast listening. A little psychology here, a little history there, which is why I want to recommend a show perfect for those with eclectic tastes. Freakonomics Radio has more than 10 years and 500 episodes worth of answers to your biggest questions. But don't be fooled, it's not just for economists and business experts. Every week, Stephen Dubner dives into the hidden side of everything. With the help of guests, including CEOs, artists, and Nobel laureates, he breaks down all sorts of things, like how we choose the people we marry, and why using swear words might be more important than you think. So don't miss out. Follow Freakonomics Radio right now, wherever you get your podcasts. Support for The Science of Happiness comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/happiness. That's odoo.com/happiness. Odoo, modern management made simple. Welcome back to The Science of Happiness. I'm Dacher Keltner. This week, we're talking about support networks and the tremendous impact they have on our lives. Our guest is the world's leading expert on humane animal handling and an advocate for people on the autism spectrum. Temple Grandin is a professor of animal science at Colorado State University. Her most recent book is Visual Thinking: The Hidden Gifts of People Who Think in Pictures, Patterns, and Abstractions. Temple, now 75, was diagnosed with autism at the age of 3, and doctors wanted to institutionalize her, as they often did with kids with autism at that time. She credits her success, in part, to the strong social connection she's built. And we know from the scientific literature how fundamental that is to our well-being. Temple, it's an honor to have you on our show.
It's great to be here.
In your lectures, you have this fascinating statement, and I wanted to see if you'd be willing just to expand on it. You said, if I could snap my fingers and be non-autistic, I would not. Autism is part of who I am. And what is happening a lot right now in our society is people are claiming neurodiversity and variations on what humans are, claiming autism as a strength in many ways, as it has been for you. How has your own autism been a source of support for you in your life and work?
Well, I'm an extreme visual thinker.
Yeah.
And that helped me in my work with animals.
Yeah.
Because animals live in a sensory-based world. And it helped me in my design work, because visual thinkers like me, there's actually a scientific name for them. We're object visualizers. You see the world in photorealistic pictures. An animal lives in a sensory-based world, not a word-based world.
Yeah.
So you got to go, what is it seeing? What is it hearing? What is it feeling? What is it smelling? With the cattle, the first thing I looked at is what cattle were seeing when they went through a chute to get their vaccinations. I didn't know at the time that other people thought verbally. I didn't know that at the time that I started this. So it was obvious to me to look at things like shadows,
wow,
coats on fences, vehicles parked alongside a facility. These are things that would make the animals stop and refuse to go through the chute. That was the very first thing that I did. And I found if you remove the distractions, like move the vehicle with a shiny reflection away from the handling facility, then the cattle would go through it. And no one had thought to look at this before.
Nice. That's really cool. You talk about, you know, being a child and feeling ostracized and being ostracized and experiences of anxiety. And I'm really curious where you found support as a child.
I had a lot of good things happen. I got into early speech therapy really early, by 2.5. My mother was always encouraging my ability in art. Mother was very creative. We were always doing art projects together, you know, carving pumpkins, making Halloween costumes. She was very much into encouraging all of those kinds of activities.
Cool. You've had this remarkable intellectual, scholarly, academic career. You got a PhD in animal science. You know, you did research on pig behavior, cattle behavior, and the like. And yet you struggled early in school, in high school. How would you think about your support system in high school and your academic journey?
I ended up getting sent to special boarding school for kids with problems. And the first thing they did is they put me to work running the horse barn, cleaning 9 stalls every day, feeding the horses. Didn't do any studying, uh-huh, but boy, I learned how to work.
Yeah.
And also, riding horses gave me friends through shared interests. I also had friends with model rockets and electronics. And I was absolutely not motivated to study.
Yeah.
Then my science teacher came along.
What grade?
That would have been practically your senior year in high school.
Okay.
I had basically just messed around and not done any studying. I had no motivation to study. And what he did is he gave me the motivation to study, because now studying was a pathway to a goal of becoming a scientist. There now was a real reason for studying. What really supported me during hard times was Mr. Carlock, my science teacher, and Anne out at the ranch. Because while I was at the special school, I spent summers out at my aunt's ranch in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
And she was another very important mentor. I cannot emphasize enough how important mentors are. Without Anne and without my science teacher, I don't think I would have gotten through high school.
Yeah, I hear you. A lot of people, when they have had this career like you have, of just different contributions to the world and, you know, really making a difference, they get this deep sense, you know, at our stage in life of like, there have been people who really supported, that were always there for them. How would you answer that question of who's always been there for you?
Well, let's talk about people that got my career started.
Yeah.
And one of them was Jim Uhl, a contractor.
Yeah.
Starting a small steel and concrete business. He was a former Marine Corps captain. He had seen some of my drawings and he seeked me out.
Wow.
He showed me how to set up a business.
Yeah.
I had no idea how to do that. And for 10 years, he was an extremely important mentor.
Hmm.
And I designed a lot of jobs for him, and we built jobs together, mainly in Arizona throughout the 70s. Well, there was still Ann out at the ranch.
Yeah.
I was still talking to her.
Yeah.
You know, they were people that helped me. And, you know, I know today, COVID lockdowns and stuff, that I've often thought, I'm an older person. And I thought about, what if COVID had happened when I was in my 20s?
Hard.
You know, and shut down all my stuff.
Yeah.
And I was a young person. I think I might have reacted to it worse than reacting to it as an older adult.
Yeah.
All I could think about as an older adult is, can't wait to get the vaccine and then I'm free.
Yeah. And that's true of the empirical data, is that the younger people have really been hit hard. So I hear you saying, you know, when I think about the message for our listeners out there, many of them younger than you and I, and making their way, is like, find those mentors.
Finding mentors.
Where do you think you found this strength? I mean, you were, you know, bullied in high school and ostracized and so forth. Where did the strength for that fierceness come from?
Well, in high school, even when I was bullied, there were still refuges away from bullying.
Yeah.
There were horses, model rocket club, which my science teacher ran, and electronics lab.
Nice.
These were places that were bully free. And we also had skiing. That wasn't as important, but bullies weren't out there most of the time.
Yeah. Did you feel a sense of home in the rocket club and the electronics?
Yes, because the people, we had a shared interest, and we could talk about how to build rockets. And I made a rocket that looked like our principal. The other kids thought that was really funny. It's a Mr. Patey rocket. I'm a big believer in the friends who shared interests, because the thing that's given me a decent life and a fulfilling life is having an interesting career. I mean, I had a great time talking with a construction person that was probably on the autism spectrum. And some of the most fun times we ever have is just talking about how to build things, how to solve a problem. Find stuff you really can get interested in.
Yeah.
And then you're going to find friends through those activities.
Yeah.
I think that's a really important thing to do, because the one thing at that boarding school they wouldn't let me do is sit around and become a recluse in my room. That was not allowed. That was absolutely not allowed. And I had to get out and I had to do things, even though I wasn't studying. I still had to attend the classes and not disrupt them. But we need to get out and do some stuff. Find something you like to do with other people.
Shared interests.
That's a shared interest. And I think this is really important.
Profound. Well, Temple Grandin, I want to thank you for your work and your visionary voice. And I want to thank you for being on our show. I've long been inspired by how you've changed our thinking in the world, and it's an honor to be with you. So thank you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Up next.
If you belong to no social groups and you're a smoker, it's a toss-up whether you should stop smoking or start joining in terms of the benefit to your health.
We hear about the effects of loneliness and how even thinking about our social connections can strengthen our well-being. I'm Dacher Keltner. Welcome back to The Science of Happiness. Strong relationships with friends, family, and mentors are some of the most important factors to our health and longevity. The more we're part of a community, the healthier and happier we tend to be. But right now, we're living through an epidemic of loneliness in the United States and around the world, with some more at risk than others, like young adults.
The other broad umbrella group of people who are at risk of loneliness are people who are, generally speaking, excluded from society for some reason. So, you know, LGBTQ, if they have a disability, if they're in a minority cultural group, these tend to be markers of people who are more likely to be at risk of loneliness.
Tegan Cruis is a clinical psychologist at the National Australian University and returning guest on The Science of Happiness. She studies social connection, how to feel more of it, and how loneliness and chronic isolation are literally toxic.
If you belong to no social groups and you're a smoker, it's a toss-up whether you should stop smoking or start joining in terms of the benefit to your health. That sounds really provocative, but honestly, if you look at the data, it's spot on.
Feeling socially disconnected can be worse for our health than being overweight, not exercising, or experiencing air pollution.
This is a really significant health risk factor that we probably need to take more seriously.
In one of Tegan's experiments, she simply reminded people of their social identities and connections before they experienced a setback.
So in this case, we gave all our participants in the study the same setback.
Everyone had to answer 5 questions that were actually impossible to solve.
And we gave them 5 minutes to work on this, and none of them got any of the questions right because they were, in fact, impossible to solve. And what we found was that the people who had been reminded of their social identities prior to doing this task, they were less likely to attribute their failure to personal, internal reasons.
So they didn't say, oh, I'm bad at these tests, or I'm just too anxious, or I'm not good at these things.
They said things like, the test was too hard, I didn't have enough time, it's the examiner's fault, and they felt less depressed. So their mood was better, despite that experience of setback. We had given them that psychological resource of that sense of being part of a collective. And that seemed to mean they were less likely to fall into those unhelpful thinking patterns in the face of a setback.
In another study, she found that the more groups someone was in, like a bowling league, an exercise class, or a book club, the less likely they were to be depressed the next year.
Among those people with a history of depression who had started engaging in social and recreational type activities, we saw a much lower risk of depression relapse. And that's exciting because relapse is a huge problem in depression.
Other studies suggest that it's not being part of just any collective that matters. It's about being part of a group you genuinely identify with.
So it's not just that I am a fan of a particular team, right? It's that is part of my identity. It's who I am. And I care deeply about that team's success. I feel happy when they win. I feel sad when they lose. And I want to spend time with other people who are part of that community. It can be my family, it can be my group of friends, it might be my neighborhood, it can be my profession. It doesn't actually need to be that sort of, you know, formal joining organizations. I think it's more about thinking about, you know, who are my people and how can I connect with them better? That seems to do more heavy lifting when it comes to health than just having strong friendships. These groups, they don't just exist out there in the world, right? They get under our skin and they influence our sense of self. And speaks to the fact that I don't think we should see social groups as like an optional extra when it comes to health. Like, this is really core business.
On our next episode of The Science of Happiness.
I want this person, I want this relationship, and I want it to be the very best that it can be. It's worth every minute you could put into it. It's worth it. And I'm certain of that.
I'm Dacher Keltner. Thanks for joining us on The Science of Happiness. What communities have supported you throughout your hard times? Share with us by emailing happinesspod@berkeley.edu or use the hashtag happinesspod. Our executive producer of audio is Shuka Kalantari. Our producer is Haley Gray. Sound designer, Jenny Cataldo of Accompany Studios. And our associate producers are Bria Suggs and Ruth Dussault. Our editor-in-chief is Jason Marsh. The Science of Happiness is a co-production of UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center and PRX.